This is Radio Superior 1950, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the land of lakes in Superior, Wisconsin. Jack McKenna here. It's Wednesday, September 13th, 1950. Lou Martin is in with the 6 o'clock news. Rapid Ray is in with the sports. And I've got a dog.
He's kind of smelly. You shouldn't have brought him here.
I didn't.
Oh.
The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Popkin Furniture, where they have their scratched and soiled sale. Get a 5-piece solid oak dinette set, as is, for just $39. And good afternoon, Lou.
Good afternoon, Jack, and good listeners. General George C. Marshall has been nominated by President Truman to be his next Secretary of Defense. And stalled U.N. troops in Korea are told that they'll soon switch to the offensive. We begin our shortwave world report from Korea.
Hello, this is Max Jordan reporting from the front lines in South Korea. Allied troops got word today that they will kick off an offensive soon against the big red Korean war machine. They have battled to a standstill for a month. Allied ground commander Lieutenant General Walton H. Walker says, quote, "Soon we are going to give up the attitude of defense. As soon as we start forward and break the crust in front of us, the enemy will fold. We can feel a weakening of the enemy now. In some positions, they actually are pulling out," end quote. The U.S. 8th Army commander described the long week of delaying action as necessary agony. "Only through such an ordeal," General Walker says, "can the Allies build up an offensive." Walker's fighting talk comes as Allied troops flatten the Red Korean bulge on the northeast front in a triple threat power drive. The United Nations gains in a three-day offensive were the greatest in nearly a month. They sealed much of the gap torn last week by communists in their massive breakthrough south from Kyi near the east coast. To the east, a mixed force of South Koreans and Americans rammed shut the southern gate of a mountain corridor, trapping 3,000 Red Koreans. This task force is led by 47-year-old Brigadier General Gar Davidson, former West Point football coach. It was a brilliant in-sweep west from the Pohang area by Task Force Davidson that trapped the Reds. On the front line in South Korea, this is Max Jordan.
This is Washington. Jack Bell here. President Truman asked Congress today to make an exception and let General George C. Marshall serve as Secretary of Defense, even though he is a military man. The Senate Armed Services Committee immediately approved the necessary legislation. Congress has to act because the law says nobody who has been on active duty as an officer of the armed forces within the past 10 years can be Secretary of Defense. An amendment to present law is necessary if Marshall is to succeed the resigned Lewis Johnson as Secretary of Defense. Bowing to presidential will, Johnson quit yesterday, blaming enemies he's acquired in the 18 months he has served in the cabinet. Mr. Truman accepted it with official regret and alacrity. Suddenly, in a single day, there were vacancies in two top civilian posts of the huge national military establishment. For what appeared to be entirely personal reasons, Stephen Early resigned as deputy secretary. General Marshall left the Army as chief of staff soon after the end of World War II in 1945 as a five-star general. General Marshall took off his uniform only to have Mr. Truman ask him to go to China to see what might be done there by the United States. He made that discouraging and arduous mission, came back, settled down to rest, and was called back in January 1947 to be Secretary of State. He left the State Department post 2 years later, sick and ill, needing hospitalization and months of convalescence. Among the charges against outgoing Secretary Johnson, perhaps the one that eventually impelled Mr. Truman to remove him, was that he had invaded the foreign policymaking field of Secretary of State Dean Acheson, that he and others of the military establishment had sought to impose military thinking on U.S. international diplomacy. When the Korean War flashed up in June and American troops were rolled back by onrushing Red Hordes, the cutbacks in military spending which Johnson had ordered and of which he had boasted became the target of critics. They said he had weakened national defense. In Washington, this is Jack Bell reporting.
James Barlow here inside the Beltline. This writer has great respect for General George C. Marshall as a man, as a citizen, as a soldier, and as a public servant. His selection by President Truman to succeed Lewis Johnson as Secretary of Defense raises several questions. In 1946, the Truman administration decided it was hopeless to keep pouring help into Chiang Kai-shek's government in its fight against the Chinese communists. Chiang's government was corrupt. It wouldn't take the steps of reform necessary to help itself, and it could not win against the communists so long as it persisted in not reforming. As a result, American aid was withdrawn, and eventually the communists drove Chiang out. But for many months now, with the communists in control of China, Dean Acheson has been condemned by the Republicans for our China policy. Senator Joseph McCarthy even called him, quote, the Red Dean, unquote. It seems unlikely that anyone would dare to try to put any red labels on General Marshall, but now we'll have to see whether Marshall is going to be criticized along with Acheson for the China policy. In Washington, James Marlow reporting.
Your man in Washington, Ray Tucker here. President Truman will soon be forced to call several National Guard divisions into overseas service because the United States has no more ground troops for the Korean fighting. They cannot be spared from their present stations in Japan, Germany, Austria, Italy, and other places around the globe. The Red attack on this remote and important peninsula has forced us to commit all our available infantry and Marines. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Omar Bradley, has felt the need for fuller mobilization for some time. He regards General MacArthur's command as a mere holding force fighting a rear guard action since the war broke out more than 2 months ago. Here are several factors which necessitate immediate increase of infantry strength and which President Truman cannot ignore, in the opinion of Pentagon experts. First, the fierce Korean weather strikes within a few weeks, and U.S. forces will suffer severe casualties from snow and an almost Arctic cold. The climate will not cripple the enemy so seriously because they are accustomed to it. Two, our men are exhausted from lack of relief on the lines. While fighting bravely, their South Korean allies are lost without capable and decisive leadership. They are undependable as replacements. In D.C., this is Ray Tucker.
This is the nation's capital, Lyle C. Wilson, United Press. A bill aimed at stifling communist activities all along the home front, headed for a Senate-House conference, but will probably be vetoed by President Truman. It received an overwhelming 70-7 vote of approval in the Senate late last night after a day of hectic and confused maneuvering that welded two opposing measures into one. The bill provides for the internment of dangerous Reds in time of war, invasion, or insurrection. It also provides for registration of communist front organizations, barring Reds from government jobs, and obtaining passports. It also has legal curbs on sabotage and espionage, new weapons to be used to deport aliens considered to be subversive, and outlawing conspiracies to set up a totalitarian dictatorship in the United States. In Washington, this is Lyle C. Wilson reporting.
Westbrook Pigler here on the Commie Watch. In view of Eleanor Roosevelt's verified record of activities and associations, and in view of her late husband's guilt in permitting the communist permeation of our government, the current bawling by boss Democrats against godless tyranny and communist aggression is no less cynical than the daily workers' outcries against Wall Street aggression in Korea. The penetration of the Department of Agriculture by Pressman, Hiss, Aptwit, and others, several of them Harvard study boys and proteges of Felix Frankfurter, began immediately. Communists wormed into the Department of Justice, the Labor Relations Board, and the State Department. Their manipulations became so bold that the Dies Committee in Congress was savagely set upon. Actually, the persons who suffered persecution by smear were not the baited Reds, but the red baiters. The very term red baiter was given a loathsome flavor, as McCarthyism is a nasty term today. But I am glad to be able to say that I declared myself to be a red baiter 15 years ago. Because she was the president's wife, Eleanor Roosevelt was the most conspicuous opponent of the Martin Dies Committee. She exploited her prominence to discredit the Anti-Communist Investigation Committee during the 1940s. It is the communist method and the method of many guilty Democrats who either connived at this treason or were culpably stupid in the presence of betrayal to say that the anti-communist campaign has been a program of terror against innocent, high-minded patriots. It does seem possible that among so many actual traitors and impudent socio-political slummers, perhaps a few innocent people were unfairly exposed to suspicion. Congressman Dice complained that he could hardly keep his hearings going above the running fire of audible sneers from the press table. Witnesses could not be heard. With the Commie Watch in Washington, this is Westbrook Pegler.
Selective Service officials believe that some married men will be drafted for military service by next July the 1st. National Selective Service Director Major General Lewis Hershey testified before a Senate committee and said that they will have drafted 500,000 people by the middle of next year, which would mean that married men would be needed. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:10. Jack McKenna has this message from Popkin Furniture.
Indeed I have, oh lovable Lou. Popkin Furniture. Indeed, Popkin Furniture. Boy, is that an important name here in Superior. Well, you know, this is their scratched and soiled sale, and it means savings for you there. An occasional chair, for example. Everybody needs an occasional chair. $25 for that, regularly $39.50. Card tables, regularly $4.95. As is, $3.95. Enough to take your breath away, folks. And how about dressers, maple and walnut finish for $24.50, regularly $39.50. Can't believe these prices. A knee-hole desk, that's what I need. A large tea drawer maple desk, just $29. Normally, it's near $40. That's it, folks, from Popkins Furniture Company. Lou?
The bus company wants to hike its fares to 15 cents. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has that story.
An application for increased bus rates in Superior will be filed with the Public Service Commission, asking an increase in fares from the current 11-cent rate to 15 cents. Attorney R.A. Crawford with the Duluth Superior Transit Company says under the new rates, the majority of passengers, those who take advantage of the token fare, will pay 1.8 cents more. The school children rate will be raised from 5 to 8 cents. Crawford says the rate for school children has not been raised since 1930, 20 years ago. He says the request is necessary due to the increased cost of labor and materials, Lou.
The Great Northern Ordox in Superior set an all-time record yesterday, loading 24 ships in 24 hours. The previous record of the Great Northern Docks was 22 ships. The Great Northern is the largest ore dock in the world. The Ashland City Council is commending Public Safety Director Wesley Wolfsbecker for his efforts in operating the Iron Lung. On September the 7th, Officer Wolfsbecker was called to St. Joseph's Hospital in Ashland, where he applied the Iron Lung to a 7-year-old girl from Mellon. The girl was transported to a Duluth hospital, while Officer Wolfsbecker continued to operate the Iron Lung to keep her breathing. Polio is suspected. The Iron Lung was a gift by the Fraternal Order of Eagles. And finally, Superior City Manager R.E. Baumbecker urged... Superior City Manager R.E. Baumberger urged the Junior Chamber of Commerce to keep up the good civic work. Mr. Baumbecker cited the J.C.'s citywide cleanup campaign as an example. Jack?
You know, I'm not crazy about those J.C.'s. Every time I drop a little piece of paper or a wrapper or something, they yell at me.
You don't fool with the Junior Chamber of Commerce.
I guess not. Lou Martin, folks, the newsman who never litters. Let's check the forecast for this Wednesday, September 13th, 1950. Continued cloudy and cool tonight and tomorrow. A low tonight around 44 degrees, with a high Thursday at just 52. A nip of autumn is in the air, you might say. It's music time. Let's enjoy Patti Page and Allegheny Moon on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Allegheny Moon, I need your light to help me find romance tonight. So shine, shine, shine on tonight. Allegheny moon, your silver beams can lead the way to golden dreams. So shine, shine, please shine, shine. High among the stars, so bright above, the magic of your lamp of love can make him mine. Allegheny moon, it's up to you. What you can do for me and for my one and only love.
Allegheny moon.
So shine, shine, shine. The stars so bright above, the magic of your lamp of love can make him mine. Allegheny moon, it's up to you. Please see what you can do. For my one and only love. Shine on me tonight, Allegheny Moon.
A little moonshine there, folks. Patti Page and Allegheny Moon on station KUWS. Hey, friends, you're invited to a fall smorgasbord this Sunday at the Red Men Wigwam in Superior. All Red Men and their Pocahontases and their friends are invited. And here's some friendly advice. Save time. Get there faster by traveling on the Arrowhead Bridge connecting Superior and Duluth at a real reasonable toll. And Superior's newest theater, the Stardust Drive-In, is showing Albuquerque in Cinecolor. See Randolph Scott and Gabby Hayes in The Wild West, plus two color cartoons at the Stardust Drive-In Theater just south of Superior.
What's the deal with this dog you bought?
Dogs are man's best friend, I'll have you know. They give you love and trust and affection, all for just the price of a few doggy biscuits.
And an occasional bath would be a good idea.
I don't need a bath.
I mean the dog.
Oh, Lou has a superior teacher who escaped the communists, folks. Ooh, scary. Let's hear Les Baxter and the Poor People of Paris on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Thank you.
Les Baxter and the Poor People of Paris on station KUWS. Howdy, Lou.
Howdy?
Well, I was just thinking of that drive-in movie Gabby Hayes is in.
Okay, partner. We have a dramatic story of escape from communists in Malaya. Welcome, Miss Norma Craven of Superior.
The old bat's got a yardstick.
I wonder if she's going to measure something.
Welcome to you, sir. It is certainly good to be back. But there's an aroma in here familiar to Malaya. In fact, it has the scent of a Malayan yak.
It's all good to me. No yaks from Jack.
Miss Craven, I understand your relatives here in Superior were deeply concerned for your safety.
People here don't realize how good you've got it, Buster.
I don't think she plans to measure anything.
So, Miss Craven, ma'am, why do you carry that yardstick?
It keeps the students in line and the snakes away. I've been in Malaya for more than 3 decades. It isn't an easy place to live. Not like the easy life you've got here.
I'm moving.
Moving to where?
Moving to make sure I'm more than 3 feet away from her.
Have you ever had to worry about wrestling a big Malayan snake?
I can't say that I have.
The worst ones are the Malayan cobra. The natives call them Naja Naja. They spit venom and can temporarily blind people. And then there's the king cobra. They growl like a small dog.
What do the natives call the king cobra?
King cobra.
Tell us about your remarkable life as a teacher and missionary.
Do you know there were 55,000 snake bites in Malaya last year? But I'm not deterred. I learned to persevere after receiving a first-rate education here at Superior Normal School. Then I began my missionary work teaching at the Methodist School in Sitawan, Malaya. In 1941, when the Japanese were advancing through the region, we Americans and Europeans had no choice but to flee. We found shelter in Singapore, then on to Java, then Australia, and thence to the United States and wonderful Superior. The George Hollies put me up in their guest room.
But you returned to the Far East.
Snakes and all?
I didn't get into teaching or missionary work for its creature comforts. We must shed the dust of our shoes to help those who need education and the Word of God.
But the situation in Malaya is once again tenuous.
You mean more snakes?
No, it's the guerrillas. Guerrillas are fighting to make Malaya a communist state. British troops, God bless them, are protecting us. Let me tell you, there are many places in the peninsula that are just not safe for Europeans or rich Asians. Gorillas are hiding in the jungle just waiting for their chance.
Do they have big teeth and really hairy?
Not gorillas. The other kind, insurgents. They carry guns.
They must really hate the zoos there.
The gorillas don't stop our social life.
But that yardstick might put a damper on things.
We had such a delightful time the last night I was there. We even forgot about the Malay policemen outside guarding the house, or the 12 revolvers on the hall stand just inside the door. All of the men carry guns, so they're ready for whatever comes at a moment's notice. Last month was anti-bandit month, and they caught or killed many rebel leaders. Still, it is so unsafe there. But I will return and continue to run my girls' school in Bahang near Kuala Lumpur.
Thank you, Miss Norma Craven, missionary to Malaya.
Good luck, Miss Craven. Bring lots of bananas with you. You might make friends with the gorillas.
Is he kidding?
I'm never sure.
On with the music, friends. This is the Four Lads and No, Not Much on the Martin and McKenna Show.
The stars don't need the sky.
10-cent soda doesn't cost a dime. I don't want you near me, only all the time. You don't thrill me when you hold me, no, not much.
Four Lads and No Not Much, a song based on Lou's love life, on Station KUWS.
Hi, Ray.
So, you got a doggie, hey, Jake?
Man's best friend, like I always say, and they're always glad to see you.
They never complain.
Unless it's past their dinner time.
They're easily amused by squeak toys, too.
So is Lou. Dog is afraid of squeak toys. He walks around them and growls.
Dog?
Well, that's what I call him, dog.
Kind of like Tarzan calling his son boy.
Lou doesn't like it. He says I should give it a nickname after his breed.
What is dog?
He's bulldog, shih tzu.
Better stick to dog. All right, fans of the sporting world, the Philadelphia Eagles are heading for professional football's dream game with the Cleveland Browns. The Eagles are twice champions of the National Football League, while the Browns are four-time holders of the defunct All-American Conference title. 75,000 people are expected for the NFL season football opener at Philadelphia. This is the first game since the two circuits agreed to smoke the peace pipe last winter and end their cutthroat competition. Eagles coach Greasy Neal might be without his star halfback, Steve Van Buren. It's fingernail-biting time at our own Muni tonight. A doubleheader is underway to decide the Northern League champs. Our brave Blues of Superior must sweep the Eau Claire Bears to win the pennant. Blues manager Red Kress named lefty Ronnie Pletz and Jack Versus as his pitching choices. Good luck, Blues. And here's a name you won't read in the box scores, fans. August Lemieux, known as Gus or Chief. He's the guy who keeps Municipal Stadium top rate. Get this typical day. To the ballpark at 8 a.m., Gus picks up trash and bottles and whatnot. From there, he gets the baselines, the pitcher's mound, and batter's box, smooth and chalked, all by noon when he puts on the feed bag. 1 o'clock rolls around, and Gus is watering the grass and putting the batting cage in place. By 7 o'clock, he turns on the lights for the night's game. The game ends, fans go home, but not Gus. No, sir. He drags the diamond, turns the lights off, and only then, by midnight, can he rest his weary bones. Talk about a good sport. Everyone loves Gus Lemieux. Jake?
Rapid Ray Paulson, folks. Time for one more number. Here's Doris Day and K. Sarah Sarah. K. Sarah Sarah on the Martin and McKenna Show.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. What will be, will be. When I grew up and fell in love, I asked my sweetheart, what lies ahead? Will we have rainbows day after day? Here's what my sweetheart said. Said I, what will be, now I have children of my own, they ask their mother, what will I be, will I be handsome, will I be rich, I tell them tenderly, que será, será.
Doris Day and K. Sarah Sarah. Got it right that time on KUWS.
I have this news flash from New York. Russia has issued its 45th veto in a vain attempt to stop United Nations troops fighting against Red North Korea. The Big Three meeting in New York continues between the United States, England, and France. Secretary of State Acheson says they're trying to decide when and how Germany's military should take part in the defense of Western Europe. And George Bernard Shaw got out of bed today in a hospital in Luton, England. The 94-year-old playwright's doctor says that Mr. Shaw is recovering from a broken hip. And why does it smell like dog biscuits in here?
Dog biscuits are in the news?
Or is that dog breath? Did you bring the dog in here?
Maybe it's because I have some dog biscuits in my jacket pocket. You want one? They're crunchy.
What do you mean they're crunchy?
Don't you like dogs?
Of course I do. Like you said, man's best friend. And they don't bark at you if you're late or whatever.
They're happy, loyal, give unconditional love. Have floppy ears, wet noses, and warm doggy breath.
It sounds like you at the station's Christmas party. That dog is here, isn't he? That explains all the dog hair on my sweater. It's all warm. He's been curling up on my sweater. Did you say rough?
No.
All right. Where's the dog? I'd like to return some of this hair to him that's on my sweater. I guess he's bald by now.
Stay tuned for Lowell Thomas, Father Knows Best, the original Amateur Hour, and Dragnet. We'll be back same time, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing, and Uncle Lou and Dog get along. Hey, I think he likes you, Lou.
Particularly my leg. Down, boy. Bad dog. Bad, bad, bad.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1950, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Paul Guggenheimer, Duke Skorich, John Munson, Gene Andreese, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1950 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.